And welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your condominium and HOA questions. So give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking the Email the Show tab.
And if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars at the Hard Rock Hotel like we had this past Thursday, and you can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites as well. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE. That's 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com.
Well, last show we spoke about some possible changes that were floating around the legislature that would have affected community associations throughout the state. But I understand that the bombshell of all bills was apparently defeated this week.
Karen, you talk about an absolutely crazy week in Tallahassee. We touched on it last week a little bit, but because the phones were so busy, we really didn't have much time to discuss that proposed bill in detail. But the bottom line, everyone, is that House Bill 5005, if passed as originally written, it would have completely terminated the Florida Division of Condominiums, Timeshares, and Mobile Homes, and it would have completely deregulated Florida Community Association managers. And we'll talk a little bit about what that would have actually meant for the state of Florida. Disaster, quite frankly. It was a really scary bill, to say the least. And worst yet, it was actually being fast-tracked through the Florida legislature at one point.
Yeah, actually, House member Esteban Bobo was the sponsor of the bill, and he had his phone ringing off the hook, I'm sure, from so many people complaining about this bill. They were just begging him not to proceed and go forward with it, and it looks like the congressman, the representative, listened to some people.
Yeah, he definitely did the right thing. I can tell you, at least on our end, on Tuesday, I wrote a letter to House Member Bovo, and I emailed it, and I faxed it, and I told him just how dangerous this bill actually was. And I invited him onto this show to defend his position on the bill. And then I called his office the next day and spoke to his staff and again invited them onto the show. And by Thursday morning, the right thing was done, and these crazy measures from the bill were pulled. The division was saved, and so were licensed community association managers throughout the state. And again, this really happened as a result of citizens really from around the entire state relentlessly urging not just House Member Bovo, but their other representatives and the governor's office to kill this bill.
I don't know. I think you're writing the letter and getting on the phone and asking him to the show really did the trick. You've got a lot of nerve, though, asking a politician to defend their position on the air.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hopefully the letter did kind of help out.
But, I think so.
Well, the bottom line is politicians certainly take the heat when they do something wrong. So today, I'm saying thank you to Representative Bovo for doing the right thing and for keeping whatever sanity is left in the condo world still in place. Good job, Representative Bovo.
Hey, Eric, let me ask you a question. What would happen to that little course you teach if that bill had gone into law?
Yeah, believe it or not, Scott, that course that we teach would have been gone because the statute requires that the directors attend a division-approved course. But it's tough to have a division-approved course without a division. So it's funny because last year condominium education was such a top priority in the Florida legislature. And this year the legislature almost did a 180 and basically almost completely did away with the division and condominium education all in one full swoop.
Well, it's a good thing that Thursday night's class had the chance to show up at the Hard Rock because our seminar this past Thursday night was sold out yet again.
Yes, it was, Karen. That's right. And I did make it a point on Thursday to tell everybody there just how close they came to not having this type of educational course being offered any longer. But in the end, again, we were officially sold out for the sixth consecutive seminar at the Hard Rock this past Thursday night. Everyone, I can tell you, certainly seemed to have a great time. And if any of those attendees are listening to the show right now, we would love to get your thoughts on the seminar and whether or not you believe this type of education for board members should be required. A lot of people actually even showed up from HOAs.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not you think it's a good thing that, again, this type of course was saved from the dust pile. And just to let everybody know, we now have a seventh seminar scheduled for April 28th. Again, that's April 28th. And remember that within 90 days of getting elected to your condo board, you must get certified or you are suspended from the board. And again, with a lot of elections happening in January, your time to get certified by taking a course may quickly be coming to an end. So for those of you that still need to get certified, you can sign up for our free course at the Hard Rock Hotel that we teach each month. And again, the next one is April 28th, 7 o'clock p.m., and there are still seats remaining. And there's only one way to register, and that's by going to our website at condocrazeandhoas.com and filling out the form. Again, that's condocrazeandhoas.com. You will get confirmation back that you're registered from Brian. And again, thank you to so many of our listeners who keep calling in and emailing me, who actually attended the seminar and have really so many nice things to say about it. And please know we really appreciate your comments and are honored by the opportunity to teach and certify now about 1,000 of you.
Wow.
that have already taken the course, including so many licensed community association managers who get 4 continuing education credits. And again, our whole staff is really, really look forward to seeing everybody last week. And we had a wonderful time teaching it. Let's keep moving on. How about we start, before we start talking about all the insanity of the past week in the Florida legislature, let's talk about that Quail Run case that's actually making the news. I saw a great article about it in the Sun Sentinel. It seems as if in Quail Run there's a master association and a condominium association at war with each other.
Mm.
There's a handful of residents in the condominium that aren't paying any dues whatsoever to the condo association or the master association. So the master association isn't collecting all of the money that it's entitled to from the condo association. And even though about 100 residents of the condo association are paying their dues to the condo association and the master association, the master is refusing to let all of the members of the condo association use any of the facilities that the master controls, like the pool and the clubhouse. It was pretty interesting because a lot of people were in court this week screaming and saying that they need the pool for health reasons. They pay up, that, you know, their dues are up to date. You can't do that because now you're interfering with medical conditions that I have.
So all of the residents in the condominium that are paying get penalized because of a few deadbeats.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little earlier, Eric, and according to the article, even the judge on the case said it seemed unfair that everybody would be punished when the Master Association is admittedly receiving most of the payments that were due from the residents. The judge's exact comment was, if you've got one bad apple, do you throw out the whole barrel? Doesn't it seem kind of unfair to you? That just sounds grossly unfair, shooting from the hip.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great comment from the judge.
Yeah, no question about it, and I agree. Not only does it sound unfair to me, but it sounds illegal in my humble opinion, and here's why. That statute allows an association the right to suspend a unit owner's right to use a common area if that unit owner is delinquent in their payments to the association. And the statute actually defines a unit owner as a record owner of legal title to a condominium parcel. So the master can only suspend owners of condominium parcels that are delinquent. So there needs to be a way to figure out which owners are paying their assessments to the master and which are not, and only those that aren't paying the master should be barred from using the common areas. That's the only way that case, at least in my opinion, can come out.
Well, believe it or not, the Master Association says there's no way to know who's paying. Yeah, I can't imagine that's the case.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. This isn't quite, you know, rocket science is to figure out who's paying. I don't really buy it for a minute. It's a poor excuse. And you don't kick an entire community of people off the common areas because you can't figure out the bookkeeping required to know who's paying and who isn't. And I tell you the truth, the burden should be on the master association to prove which owners aren't paying before they terminate them, not the other way around. The burden shouldn't be to prove that you're actually paying.
Well, wasn't the whole purpose of this law to get deadbeats to pay up? I mean, I can't see how the purpose of the law is served if people who aren't deadbeats have their rights taken away when they don't owe anything.
Karen, I'm with you completely on this, and I hope the judge sees it that way and the residents quickly get back into their pool and clubhouse. How about we take our first call, Lynn in Wellington?
Yeah, this is Lynn. Can you hear me?
Yes, how are you, Lynn?
I'm good. As far as new board members being certified,
yes,
can they also just sign a piece of paper stating that they have read the documents?
Yes, you can. You can still get certified, unfortunately, by signing an affidavit that says you've read all of the governing documents of your association, that you've read Florida Statute 718, and that you, I think the statute says something like that you're going to do your very best to basically abide by the terms of those documents. We take the position, naturally, that if you actually did read all of those documents, it would take you a lot longer than the 2 or 3 hours it does to attend a course where you're actually going to learn something. And you might not appreciate the documents that you read before taking the course. Maybe you want to take the course and then bother reading your documents. It should really be in that order, because if you take the course first, you're going to understand them a lot better when you eventually do get around to reading them. But, you know, at
good
least
point.
That's how we certainly look, you know, feel about it. No two ways about it. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. All right, how about this? Let's take our first break. And when we get back, let's talk about why that bill was introduced in the first place, why it was a crazy idea and made no sense, ways we can make the division even stronger, and why licensed community association managers are so vital to the community associations throughout Florida. Call us with your thoughts on any of these issues or any other condo or HOA issue on your mind at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze. Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. And we are taking your calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585.
All right. We were talking before the break about why getting rid of the division of condominiums was such a bad idea. And let's start with the fact that the legislature obviously believes it has a duty to slash spending and cut down on big government. Now, obviously, they certainly believe they came in with that mandate this time around. But really, let's talk about whether or not the division actually takes money out of the state's coffers, because I don't think they do.
Well, you know, Eric, we have to educate our condominium association clients all the time that, guess what? Every year, you have to pay your dues to the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. As our listeners should know, each condominium in the state of Florida pays about exactly $4 per unit to the division. So really, the division is entirely self-supported. While many people may understand a need to trim the fat in government during these tough economic times, the bottom line is the agency is absolutely not a drain on taxpayers. It's quite actually the opposite.
Yeah, I agree with you, Scott. And besides this being a dollar and cents issue, the division serves an incredibly useful purpose. Their document examiners, for example, they approve all the filings for condominium developers throughout the state, and they ensure that developers comply with Florida Statute 718. And these examiners, when you think about it, they're perhaps the only form of consumer protection between buyers and developers of condominium units throughout the state. And as I wrote to House Member Bovo, as an attorney who's practiced in this area, you know, my whole 20-year career, it would be difficult to perceive for a moment that developers would be allowed to file condo documents and actually sell units without any state oversight whatsoever. And it would simply open the door to meet unscrupulous developers, even more than we have now.
You're so right, Eric.
Right? Taking advantage of Florida residents at a time where the baby boomer generation is expected to move to this state by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in the near future. And I even explained in that letter that our own courts have issued numerous written court opinions, actually, where even the courts recognize the need for protection of Florida citizens against bad, unscrupulous developers.
But, you know, this is Florida, Eric. The land of opportunity for every developer without a conscience. And all their buddies, too, right?
Absolutely.
To me, it's really difficult to believe that the legislator was even considering allowing developers of condominiums to go completely unregulated. It's like allowing a fox the free reign of the hen house.
Yeah, I agree. And, of course, their other job, or another major job of the division, is complaint resolution. And here is the difficult issue. You know, I'll say this. The people at the division that work on trying to resolve condo complaints, they work very hard, no two ways about it. And this is absolutely not meant as a knock on anything that they do. But the problem is that they receive tens of thousands of complaints per year. And in order for these investigators to be able to do their job even more effectively, their budget would probably have to increase tenfold. And because it never is and never will be, actually, at least a portion of the public perceives it very rare that any person or association ever gets more than a slap on the wrist, even when the division finds out that they actually did something wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, I can also argue that some complaint resolution is better than no complaint resolution at all. And, you know, the bottom line is that if that bill had passed, an owner no longer would have any agency to complain to and instead would have been forced to litigate their issues against the association in a court of law.
Yeah, no two ways about it. Yeah. How about we go to, I guess it's Chloe in Okeechobee.
Hmm.
Chloe, you
Hi.
There? How are you, Chloe?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. How can we help you?
Okay, I have a question. Our HOA actually fired the attorney. In the meantime...
Our number is 877, the number 4 Condo Craze. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go right ahead. Go right ahead, Chloe. I'm sorry. Dad, you fired your lawyer.
That was our terrible attempt at humor.
Okay, and so actually, prior to that, they had found that I had missed a payment back a year before. Well, the attorney and I were going over my paperwork and everything, and he said, just send in the check and we'll be fine. Well, I sent it in. However, something came up. I had to stop payment on the check. Well, I paid the attorney the $25 stop payment, and I told him that I would issue a new check. He would not accept my check from my checking account. So, therefore, I didn't realize that I could pay by, other means other than cash or whatever. Anyway, so now my association has hired a new attorney, and now I have to pay $750 for this old fired attorney, actually.
Are you saying a lien was actually filed on filed against your unit?
I guess so, yes.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that fair?
Couple...
the association's telling me that they paid the attorney.
Right.
So
okay.
Now I have to repay them.
A couple of things. You're in an HOA, right? Not a condominium, right?
Right.
Okay. There's a case out there that certainly a lot of our listeners may know about. It's a condominium case, though, that came down from the Third District Court of Appeal about a year or two ago, which says an association, unfortunately this was a condo association, cannot refuse to accept a payment, period. Even if the file is with the attorney, if you walk into the manager and you say, hey, I have a payment, I want to make a payment, they must accept your payment because the statute actually lays out a method by which those funds are to be applied.
Yeah.
Again, no grounds for at least for a condo association not to accept a payment, but that same case does not necessarily apply to homeowner associations.
Yeah, but quite frankly, in my opinion, Eric, if you use that case to support an argument, supporting making people pay in an HOA, I think every court in the state would look at that and think that it should be adapted for HOAs as well.
I agree too. I don't think that an association has a right to turn away your payment when you want to make one. And why? Because if you look at the reasoning in that case, that court said, well, if the association would have accepted the money, the amount in dispute would have been a lot less, and it might not have resulted in litigation in the first place. So, Chloe, if you like,
exactly.
you can call our office tomorrow, and I'd be glad to email you a copy of that case. Okay?
Okay. Thank you
okay.
so much.
Thank
and your number at your office, I'm sorry.
Again, that's 877, the number 4, Condo Craze. Okay?
Thank you
okay.
so much.
Thank you, Chloe. Okeechobee, that's way up there, right?
Yeah,
Karen? Yeah.
She's listening. That's
all
awesome.
All right, we are all over the place. And Scott, getting back to what you were saying, there's no two ways about it that if this bill would have passed, if this just simply would have been an incredible burden on the courts. You're absolutely correct. And if you think the courts would have been more crowded without DBPR complaint resolutions, think of what would have happened if there was suddenly no arbitration division in Tallahassee.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, they hear the several thousand cases per year, by the arbitrators in Tallahassee. And I'm not saying, by the way, that the arbitration statute is perfect because it is not. For instance, I don't think that arbitrators should be allowed to kind of wash their hands of a case that fails at mediation and then actually force the parties to go to court, because that basically defeats the whole purpose of the statute. But arbitration no doubt saves the court system from hearing a few thousand extra cases per year, no doubt.
I agree that there's no question that there would be thousands and thousands more condo cases filed each year in the court if the arbitration division was shut down. And with the courts facing tremendous budget cutbacks, there's no question that without the arbitrators in Tallahassee, there would be a tremendously large burden increased on our courts.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting to watch what's going on in the papers lately, because there's this obvious battle between the legislative and judicial branches, because the courts basically are now actually having to beg for more money from the legislature. And this bill, if passed, really would have been like a terrible jolt to the court system, because it would have forced the court system to deal with more minor types of condo disputes that our arbitrators in Tallahassee are currently handling, like election disputes, records disputes, you know, and things of that nature that the courts never really wanted to get involved with in the first place. But if you think you already heard the worst part about the proposed bill, you would be wrong, because the governor's bill wanted to completely deregulate Florida Community Association managers. That's right. You heard me right. Community Association managers would no longer be licensed. And believe it or not, last year the Florida legislature wanted directors of condominiums to take this course, of course, that we talk about each week. They wanted directors to learn the law. They wanted directors to get certified. But here we are a year later, and this new law wouldn't have even required your community association manager to learn a thing about condo law or even pass a criminal background check before being in charge of a condo or HOA. It was absolute insanity, to say the least.
And it's really a slap in the face of all Florida Community Association managers who attended the required schooling, passed the state examination, and keep their continuing educational requirements up to date. So many of these hardworking people take their job very seriously and take lots of pride in what they do, and this law just attempted to undermine that entire process.
Yeah,
and
hey,
I wasn't proud of that.
Hey, we're taking your calls. Got to go to a quick break. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, taking your phone calls, and the lines are lit up. 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll go to Sam in Boca. Sam, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for having a great show.
Thank you very much, sir.
I wish that some of my colleagues, some of my board members would listen more often. In relation to these proposed legislation, I'm a CAM license manager here in Florida, and I have some other significant licenses as well, which include the LEED. We, as managers, take these courses to provide the best possible service we can to the HOAs, to the realty community. Doing away with such regulation, I think, would be paramount or parallel to having an arsonist be the fire chief. Can you imagine going into a condominium situation and not having any knowledge whatsoever?
How about this one, Sam? How about this? How about if there was no regulation? You can have a situation, and I was quoted on this in the Daily Business Review this week, you can have a situation where a community association manager who had actually lost his license previously by the division because they got caught stealing from an association and had their license taken away, that guy would be allowed to go right back to the same condominium all over again if there was no licensure requirement. That's how crazy the statute actually was.
It's totally obscene. Again, and for those of us that really care about our profession, we go and above and beyond just the regular requirements that we need for the state of Florida. That legislation is totally obscene.
Absolutely.
And again, it's an insult to everyone.
Well,
I can
tell you
today,
that our firm was behind you 10,000%. We certainly feel that way. Quite frankly, you guys are oftentimes also a buffer and a protector of the people that live in the community. Between that, and sometimes even between you know, the unit owners and out of control boards. So you
absolutely
got, you
know, right.
You guys keep a lot of boards in line, quite frankly, too. So
absolutely right. That's the hardest part of our job. We have to be a diplomat as well.
Absolutely.
So it's far-reaching. Position is far-reaching.
There we are. Certainly one phone call in favor of continued CAM regulation. And I can tell you, you know, hey, I'm an attorney, and I will tell you that you absolutely have to have attorney regulation, because without it, you know, needless to say, attorneys are going to create more problems for themselves. And I want us to be regulated because it makes all of us look better, too. No two ways about
it. No question. And as far as the property manager is concerned, I speak to our attorneys a few times a week just to make sure things are on par.
Well, you sound like you're on the ball.
That relationship must exist.
Great. Well,
absolutely.
Chalk one up for continued regulation. Thank you very much for the phone call, Sam. Thank you for listening to the show. All right. How about we go to Margo in Miami?
Hello, Margo.
Hi, Eric.
How are you?
I have a question about the annual audit.
Yes.
My association has a history of being like 1 or 2 years late in providing it.
Okay.
And I've always properly requested it. And this year, I've been requesting the 2009 annual audit since, I guess, last April.
Okay.
And I've been put off with various excuses. And the latest excuse is that apparently our past manager was committing, was either stealing or committing some sort of fraud.
Right.
And they're using that for a reason not to provide me with a copy of the 2009 financial audit. Is that a legitimate excuse?
The bottom line is that audit has to be prepared, again, within 120 days of the end of the fiscal year for your community. And no, there really is no excuse for it, unless all of the records obviously disappeared somehow. The fact that somebody might have stole money is all the more reason why you need an audit. So, no, that is absolutely not an excuse at all. They're now a year late, and if it's the 2009.
Yeah, no, apparently in October when I requested it, the manager, which she's no longer with us, she said that a draft had been made, but the final draft wasn't available yet.
Margo, is this a condo?
Board approved it.
Is this a condo or an HOA, by the way?
Work has been done on it.
Is this a condo or an HOA?
It's a condo.
And about how many units are there?
A little over 300.
Okay, so this is, yeah, so when we use the word audit, you're certainly talking about a situation that would require an audit, because that's required in communities where the budget is $400,000 and up. And certainly, that certainly is the community that you're living in. And yes, where an audit is required, it should be done within 120 days of the end of your fiscal year. There is no excuse for it. And I can tell you that if you filed a complaint with the division, that's something that they will follow up on, because that's something they really wanted me to stress in the course that we teach each month. They wanted us to spend a lot of time on year-end financial reporting. And for these very reasons, because they get a lot of telephone calls each year from irate unit owners like yourself complaining that the boards did not do the year-end report. So, again, you give them a call, they will follow your lead, and they will force your association to do the right thing and get that report done. Okay?
Okay, great,
all right.
Eric.
Thank you very much, Margo. How about we go to Brad, also in Miami? Brad, you there?
Hey, Brad.
Yes.
How are you, Brad?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air, Brad.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. One, I attended a condo meeting, and there seemed to be a dispute going on, and one of the unit owners, not resident, who had a family member in his unit, requested certification of the entire board, and the association attorney was present, and he said that how there was a new law that stated resident board members living in the building were exempt from that from having that certification. Is that the case?
No, absolutely not the case. Whether you live in the building, whether you don't live in the building, it's irrelevant. You still have to get certified. And again, two ways to do it. You get certified by either signing that silly affidavit, basically saying that you're a know-it-all and you know everything already, or you attend a course. and those directors have to do it, again, within 90 days of the last election, if that election was since last July 1st. And if they did not do it, guess what? They are suspended until they actually wind up getting certified. So you can tell them that's what we said on the show, and if they want more information about it, they can call and ask. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
The second question is, some months ago, I think it was last year, you were talking about, I don't know what documents concerning the condominium. After 25 years, it becomes null and void, and it has to be renewed within a certain period of time. I don't know if it's a declaration of...
That's called the MRTA laws, and basically that's more prevalent in homeowner association communities, not so in condominium association communities. Basically, in an HOA, you got to make sure that you re-record your declaration of covenants within 30 years. And if you don't, all of your covenants could be gone, erased, like they don't exist any longer. So, again, that's not important in terms of a condo, but very important in terms of an HOA. All right? Thank you very much for the call. How about we go to Bruce in Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, hi.
How are you, Bruce?
I attended the certification program that you provided, your first one, and I'm wondering what kind of wording goes on the certification for someone who hasn't attended that.
For someone who hasn't attended the course?
Yes.
Yeah, they have to sign an affidavit that basically says they've read all of the governing documents of the community, meaning the Declaration of Condominium, the Articles of Incorporation, the bylaws, the rules and regulations, and not only that, that they also read the entire 718 statute.
And how do you know if they actually did?
Of course you don't know. It's kind of silly, quite frankly.
Oh, they're signing an affidavit. People don't lie on those ever.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true. Those banks never lied on those affidavits either, right? That's true
never,
when you think about it. Yeah. Quite frankly, it's silly. And I certainly would have liked to see the legislature this year address that. I would have loved to see them do away with the certification by affidavit possibility. But at least for now, that's not on the legislative agenda.
Is there a sample affidavit anywhere?
No, there's not a sample affidavit. You might be able to get one, I stand corrected, by going to the division's website. You might be able to get one from there. I believe there actually is a form that you can get and download from them.
They should have to take a test.
If you have a test, maybe nobody won. But certainly a course. I don't have a problem with that. Okay?
Well, I got the second one doing the course now, but I got three that aren't on the course.
Bruce,
what'd
you think about the course?
I loved it.
Really?
Good.
And I didn't need the chocolate chip cookies, but I loved the course.
I'm glad you liked it. And,
and it worked very well. I mean, I can't imagine how smoothly it went. So.
That's fantastic. And that was the first one you attended way back when?
That was the first one you went. Yeah. November, I guess.
Wow, that's great. Since then, we've hit the 1,000 mark.
Yep.
So, again, thank you for being one of the first ones. It's obvious that you cared enough about your community to attend the course. How about we do this?
Thank you for the information.
Thanks, thank you for the call, Bruce. How about we take a quick break, and when we get back, can we see that you're still on the line? And we'll be taking more of your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro, attorneys from Glazer & Associates, taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Of course, we're going to Ken in Lake Worth, who's been holding on the line. Thanks, Ken.
How are you, Ken?
Hello.
You're on the air, Ken.
Yeah, I was calling... the insurance for unit owners, the internal unit, is insurance mandatory?
How about we have with us in the studio today, today's your lucky day there, Sean Virtue from Smith, Watson & Parker, and how about we let him answer, you're hearing from the guru directly.
Hey there, good morning, Ken.
Okay. Hi.
The answer to the question is, as of last July, that requirement's been repealed out of Florida statute. So there is no statutory requirement to carry the inside insurance. However, Your docs might have that requirement, and so it would be a good idea to look at your governing condo docs. Usually there's a chapter, there's a paragraph on insurance, and in those paragraphs it might say something like unit owners are required to carry their property insurance and name the association, or might not.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because these things keep skyrocketing, you know?
Right.
That's $1,000 for a small condo unit.
So. Not mandatory. Okay. As a matter of fact, there was something in the statute about a year ago that actually came out this past July. For those that remember, it allowed the association to ask you for a copy of your policy, and if you didn't have one, the association was actually able to force place insurance. That was actually repealed. But again, as Sean is saying, take a look at your documents to make sure there's no requirement. Okay?
One other thing quickly. We never had dogs in here, but all of a sudden, the last 3 years, they allowed dogs, and now we're starting to get overrun.
Oh, boy.
Well, I have
the original documents.
Here we go, dogs.
There you go. Scott, this is all you. Scott spends half of his life litigating dog cases.
Oh, jeez.
It must be. That was a big big issue.
Yeah. Well, are people?
Is there any way to, I know we can't preclude them anymore.
Well, you.
Is there
the
any
question
way we
is,
can restrict where they can walk?
Well, Scott, how about I let you answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just because their community has dogs in it right now doesn't mean that the dogs run the community. you know, your board of directors still has the ability to make reasonable rules and regulations regarding the use of the common elements, so they can determine where the dogs can be walked, how much, you know, requirements to pick up the dog's mess once they're done making it,
right.
And quite frankly, you know, if you want to have dogs in certain parts of the common areas or not, like by the pool and a lobby or anything like that. They can even make rules that make sure you have to carry them out instead of letting them walk through a lobby. So the board can do a lot of things to restrict the nuisances that pets
can cause. The original documents say you can curb them outside the community.
Oh.
Now, it's kind of an ambiguous, you know, thing in the docs. So.
Well, the Florida statute gives the board the power to make those rules. And
a
rule basically stating that you can only walk them in a certain area and you have to pick up their mess when they're done, I can't imagine any arbitrator or judge not saying that that's not reasonable.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Hey, we can do a whole show on, or shows, I should say, on pets. But how about we go to John in Boca? How are you, John?
I'm a 25-year-old. By the way, I want to thank you guys. The program is a real service.
Thank you very much.
I live in a 25-year-old condo that has around it about a 6.5-7 foot hedge that has been there for 20 years anyway, of the 27 years that the condo, before that it was growing, but it reached this height probably 20 years ago. There's always been a dispute. Some people on the first floor want the condo, the hedge cut down for view. Some people on the first floor want the hedge left there for privacy. Boards in the past have elected to leave the hedge. The new board now wants to cut the hedge down from 7 feet to 3 feet. Does that need the type of approval of the membership that a change in such structure would need?
I can tell you that there are cases out there where landscaping decisions, if they're going to be major landscaping decisions, can in fact be considered material alterations to the common elements. Lowering a hedge from 7 feet to 3.5 feet, you know, cutting it down by half, I don't know if that would be considered a material alteration, in and of itself. Before I gave you an intelligent answer on that question, I would want to research some cases actually first. But again, it might depend on what prior arbitration decisions have said in that regard. But I know there are cases that say landscaping could be a material alteration.
Hedge law.
Hedge law. We got to look that up. Cool. All right.
Okay.
You can call us at the office tomorrow.
Next week?
How about this? How about call us at the office again, 877, the number 4, Condo Craze, and we will be glad to give you an answer at that time. Fair enough?
Okay. The number is what now?
877, the number 4, and then Condo Craze.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call, John.
Thank you.
All right. How about we do this? We get away from the craziness that was Tallahassee politics for a moment this week. And how about we tell our listeners maybe the best question of the night from one of our participants at the seminar on Thursday. Now, apparently, this gentleman was a Canadian, and he was told – yeah, this broke everybody up, actually. And he was told that since he wasn't a U.S. citizen, he was unable to serve on his condo board. So he raised his hand and wasn't afraid. He wanted to know if that was actually the law. Can Canadians serve on a condo board here in Florida? So we had to explain that there was no U.S. citizenship requirement in the statute or even a Florida resident requirement in the statute, and that technically you can even be a member of Al-Qaeda and be on the board as long as you are a unit owner. You don't have a felony conviction, you aren't delinquent in your assessments, and you haven't been arrested for trying to steal from the condo.
Well, don't you think your Al-Qaeda example was a little bit extreme?
Until one of them gets convicted of a felony.
Yeah, right. I asked some of the plaintiffs I represented over 20 years, and if they think it's a bad analogy, you may be very surprised at the answer that you will hear,
so
Karen.
Being Canadian, you can serve.
Absolutely. I told them next time we're going to have a Canadian flag. We'll just like they do in the NBA
right.
games, we'll sing the Star-Spangled Banner and the Canadian anthem. What's it called?
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada. There you go. We'll do that next time. But it's pretty obvious, though, would you say, though, in light of the events this week, if there ever was going to be a legislature that would push through a new law requiring U.S. citizenship in order to serve on a condo board, this may be the one, but we're not there yet. But with all the craziness that happened over the last week, it's, I guess, almost time to regroup and figure where we are in terms of all that pending legislation, what's been killed, what's now left on the table, and what looks like is going to be passed and how it's going to affect all of us. We probably have about a minute or two to go in the show, and before starting that next topic, I think it's probably best to hold that off
okay.
for next week, rather, because there's a whole bunch of action that's anticipated to take place this coming week in Tallahassee that's going to resolve a lot of issues regarding certification.
And any word on your Supreme Court argument?
No word on a Supreme Court argument yet. Funny story this week, funny situation. I got an email from Lewis in our office. There's a website in Canada, actually, that talks about condominium law. So Lewis stumbles upon it, and he pulls it up on his screen, and there's my there's a picture of Judge Judy, and right underneath Judge Judy is a story about my case.
I really like Canadians.
And what does it say? If you think watching Judge Judy is fun and exciting, you should actually take a look at a real Supreme Court case in the state of Florida about condominium law. So we were very, very flattered by
yes.
the fact that they put that up there. Condominiums are called stratas, apparently.
Stratas.
In Canada. Anyway, we are at the end of another week. Everybody, thanks for the great phone calls. Much appreciated. We will see you next week again, same time, same place here on Condo Craze and HOAs. Have a great week,
thanks.
Everyone.